No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast, episode 168. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site. My co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site for the Arizona Cardinals. Seth, it's not happy time in Cardinals land. I mean, it's sad, but it's not too bad. The sky's not falling, is it?
No, I mean, it was that unfortunate reality that what you and I talked about before the game, that if they got behind, this game was over. And they got behind. And, you know, they held Zeke down. They held Dez Bryant down. They outgained the Cowboys offensively by a pretty large margin, if I remember correctly. And none of it mattered, because in the end, it comes down to points. Points are really all that matter. And the Cardinals came up on the short end of that. And so now we regroup and try to figure out and prepare, you know, can they get ready for San Francisco in 5 days?
So if you had not noticed, the Arizona Cardinals fall to 1-2 on the season after their Monday night matchup against the Dallas Cowboys. They jump out to a quick 7-0 lead. They start like we've seen the Cardinals start in 2015. But ultimately, things don't go well the rest of the way. They fall 28-17. Carson Palmer has really a statistically fantastic game. Larry Fitzgerald has a game for the ages. But Palmer is sacked 6 times. Field positions is bad. The kicking game isn't good. There were definitely things to take away and things to be worried about, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to start with what were the good things that stood out. We're going to talk about the bad things that stood out. We're going to talk about some of the issues of the injuries in the offensive line. What exactly are the Cardinals? We keep talking about this every week. Do we know what the Cardinals are yet? We'll talk about that. And then look ahead to the San Francisco 49ers 49ers get the long week if they get the mini bye early, and that the Cardinals come in off a day and short next. What can we expect this weekend against San Francisco? So let's start off the good things that stood out. I think we have to start. Number one, holy cow, Larry Fitzgerald, after kind of a quiet first couple of games, 13 catches on 15 targets, 149 yards, a touchdown. He was, and the numbers, he had not had a game like that since 2010. He tied his career high in receptions in a game, and he looked like, you know, the bright lights came on and he shined like a star does. And it's a notch it to another thing that he does. And now, you know, after you thought about the first couple of weeks where, maybe he won't have that step. Well, what he does, he puts himself right on track for those 100 balls that he's going to catch this year. He's got 20 receptions now through 3 games. Yeah, so that's on pace for just over 100 balls like he did last year.
Yeah, and I think when it's all said and done with Fitz, it's going to be another, you know, high volume. Low yardage isn't the right word, right? I mean, he's going to be right around, you know, 9 to 11 yards per catch type thing. He's not going to be, you know, he's not going to have 75 catches for 1,400 yards like these young receivers are doing nowadays. He's going to have to work for his yardage, and he's not going to be like Antonio Brown and have 102 catches for, you know, 1,600 yards. So, it was great to see Fitz and the competitor Fitz is and what he does in terms of just elevating the play around him from everybody. You know, he was obviously the focal point for the defense, and Jermaine Gresham, you know, had a nice game receiving. Andre Ellington did a nice job. Jerron Brown was close to having a 3-touchdown game, ended up with one. You know, J.J. Nelson didn't have a catch, but he ran a great route and was open, and unfortunately Carson Palmer just missed him. It was one of those games, man, where you're close, but sometimes, and maybe this is the story right now, is that talent wins out, and maybe that's what happened in the first game, and maybe that's what happened in the third game.
And another positive you have to look at is the way that they started. You know, through two games, they had put together, what, 6 first half points? Really looking kind of scroggy, sloggy, crappy offense. A lot of 2016 in the first half. They looked sleepy. They looked erratic. They came out as I expected them. I expected them to do this in their home, but they came out, moved right down the field. Carson Palmer completed, 12 of his first 13 passes.
And and the incompletion was a throwaway on a screenplay.
He just threw it to the ground. He was fantastic. The second drive, they were in position. They should have been up 14-0, and then we'll talk about the bad part, but, you know, Carson Palmer, you could not have expected him to play any better than he did.
No, and it's one of the things that, you know, I wrote about, and I think people misunderstand what a quarterback winning games is versus a quarterback who keeps your team in games. And most quarterbacks in the NFL, you know, probably from like QB 16 to QB 5, keep teams in games. Like, they don't win games for their teams. They can definitely lose games when they have an off day, but they're not the quarterbacks. They're not Tom Brady. You know, they are not Aaron Rodgers. They may not be Dak Prescott at this point. You know, and so Carson Palmer had a fantastic game, and that's the type of game that, you know, I expect, maybe a strong word, but that's the type of game we're going to need to see from him every week if the Cardinals are going to be in games and have a chance to win. And they'll have to have some other things and other units on the offense step up to finish it off. But in the end, when you look at it, you, like you said, you can't ask for much more from Palmer at this point in his career, especially when you look at it and he had no turnovers. Sacked 6 times. He threw 2 balls that should have been picked, but I'm not one of those people that believes in those plays, because I think everything kind of evens out in the end. You know, he threw the one pass early that was kind of the quick slant, and the slot corner read it and broke on it and just, you know, missed it. And then the one, you know, kind of what the heck was that play, was that where he scrambled and then decided to throw the ball away and threw it right at the defender. And you're like, wait a second, that's not an offensive player. but I mean, outside of those 2 throws, he missed some throws, but he missed in the right spots. He didn't miss towards defense. And so I thought him not having any interceptions kind of made up for the game against Detroit, where he probably should have just had 1. And so, like I said, it all evens out in the end.
Another thing that I took away that was a positive, it was in this, within the context of the negative. And when David Johnson went down, I talked about, and the show where he talked about that, was how Andre Ellington had to be rookie year Andre Ellington, and he looked good. I mean, he's not going to change. So there was some chatter among media members that, well, the Cardinals, we might be seeing a 4th starting running back in as many weeks. David Johnson started the first week. Then you had Kerwin Williams and Chris Johnson started against Dallas. Were they going to say Andre Ellington against San Francisco? No, that's not changing. But Ellington had 22 yards on the ground on nearly 4.5 yards rushing. He looked good running the ball. He caught 5 passes for 59 yards. So he was dynamic and explosive and dangerous, something we haven't really seen from him in a while. And that's the type of Andre Ellington. I think we need to see more Andre Ellington, especially since this offense was built for David Johnson. Andre Ellington is really the only player at all equipped to do what David Johnson did in terms of focal point. And we've seen that he can do it. It's just a matter of if his usage gets too high, does he get hurt? And we need to see more. You know, Andre Ellington is the cowbell. We need more cowbell, because now that's not to say you got to, like with Rashard Mendenhall, you talked about in that show as well. They need the guy to run the into the pile for those 3 yards or 2.5 yards to 3 yards a carry. But that way it opens things up for Ellington and then for the receivers as well.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's kind of what we're waiting for on that end is, you know, Chris Johnson hasn't done that, but you've seen the growth in Ellington over the first two games or kind of the resurgence of Ellington. And for me, the other good thing was you again see Chandler Jones coming up with timely sacks. I'm not big on pressures. And so, you know, he had a couple pressures in the game and Dak made great plays on them. And that's why I hate pressures, because, you know, the Cardinals play in a division with Russell Wilson. I've seen pressures amount to zero too many times. You know, get a sack. And
well, so not only zeros, but they ended up being explosive plays the other
exactly.
way.
And so, you know, get a sack and I don't have to worry if Dak or Russell Wilson's throwing the ball after escaping a near sack and throwing the ball, you know, 45 yards down the field to an open receiver. So, but I thought Chandler Jones had another great game. I mean, the dude's on pace for 21 sacks at this point. The Cardinals are getting not just every penny worth, but I did not expect this, this level of play from him, to start the season. And this isn't a shot at him or anything, but guys tend to get a little, lazy is not the word, because I'll never question anybody's
less work ethic. Hungry,
right? They're not, they don't have anything to prove anymore,
because there's less desperation. They don't play with desperation anymore because they got their contract,
right? So to see him come out and he's on his way to having his best season as a pro the year he got paid. I mean, not the year he needs to get paid, the year he got paid, and all of a sudden the Cardinals. This is looking like in real time, like the best signing Keim has had or the best extension Keim has given. Obviously, again, this is in real time, but big money extension. We're not talking about the cheap Palmer Fitzgerald things, but, you know, best big money extension that has been given so far. So I I want to say one thing. I've seen a lot of complaints about Andy Lee and punting. What could he have done better yesterday? He can't control when he's kicking out of his end zone on what, 3 occasions. Like, I get that he's not Marquette King and he can boom the ball 72 yards down the field on a punt, but they had a number of missed tackles on those punts. He was trying, they were shorter because he was trying to give his gunners time to get down there and make plays, and they missed. And so, you know, we can complain about Andy Lee, but it's not his fault that he's punting from inside his own end zone multiple times in a game. Again, that goes back to the offense and the offensive line's inability to do anything. I get that we are waiting to see, you know, that punt that just changes the game, but that's not who Andy Lee is. That's not who he's been. He's, you know, he's working with what he has, which is unfortunately right now not good offense.
I think that probably takes us to the end of the overall positives. I'll note one other thing, and that was you know, we believed that the Cardinals would be effective, would be able to limit Ezekiel Elliott, and they did. He had only 80 yards on 22 carries, and 30 of those came on one busted play where they missed the tackle at the line of scrimmage. Yes, that counts. But you take that one carry out, and then it's, you know, it's 50 yards on 21 carries. And really, if you look at, there were two runs that they played poorly. The one was the 30-yarder, and that was a missed tackle. But the other one was the back-breaking touchdown at the end, where it was basically just wide open. But overall, defensively, at least up front, they did what they needed to do to stop a team that is really, you know, they were a team based on running the ball with Zeke. And they needed to stop him, and they needed to get out to a good start so that they could get away from that and then make it a passing game for Dak. They did partially. They got this quick start. They didn't pile on. They didn't get that second score, but they limited Zeke. But he did become more effective throughout the game because how it ended up being, let me check what the halftime stats were. Because at halftime, Elliott had 31 yards on the ground, but 30 of those came on the one run. So outside of that one busted play, he had 1 yard on 7 other carries. And even on the game, you know, the Pro Football Focus numbers said he had 80 yards rushing. He had 82 yards after contact. So the Cardinals were getting to him behind the line of scrimmage on average. And that was positive to see.
And even on that big run, Matthew just came in too high. And yep. if he comes in low and makes the hit low, it was, you know, it's a completely different conversation. I don't think it changes the game, so to speak, but it definitely changes the conversation we're having.
Right. And for that, we'll wrap up what we're talking about with the positives. We'll talk up next, coming up right on Rise Up Sea Red, we'll talk about the bad things that stood out. And there are definitely plenty of those. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We wrapped up the things that stood out in the good. There's definitely enough concerns. And I think this will lead to what we're going to be talking about afterwards, what type of team we think they are. I'm going to say I don't think they're a bad team. So that'll preview that. But what was number one for you? And I think I hope this is what I think you're going to talk about. What would be the number one standout negative that you saw from that game?
I mean, obviously the offensive line is the biggest issue. And that's something we can talk about. But when you look at this team and who they are in 2017, they need a defense that makes plays and gets stops. And, you know, I try to always find like one nugget of information that's interesting, maybe only to me, but that's interesting. And through three games, the Arizona Cardinals in the second half have given up 60 points on offense or on defense. Sorry. 60. So
they've given up 60 offensive points. These aren't special teams or returns. These are 60 offensive points they've given up.
So they've given up 60 points. That would be good over three games to be like 19th in the league in points allowed defense. That doesn't include the first half. So, like, if you're going to be a team that is offensively struggling to score points, you have to have a defense that doesn't allow points. And through three games, that's just, I mean, it happened a little bit in Indy. They only gave up three, but that kind of makes it even worse and kind of goes back to what I talked about earlier. Are they just not good enough to hang with teams that, you know, are playoff bound or playoff contending teams outside of the NFC West? And I, you and I don't think so, but maybe you and I are kind of late to the boat.
Well, here's my take on this, and this is what we've talked about for years, and we talked a little bit off the air. The Cardinals don't have, and you mentioned this, the Cardinals aren't built to be a defense and field position team. To do that, they need the type of defense the San Francisco 49ers had in with, you know, Patrick Willis and Justin Smith in the early 2010s, when you have the 2010, 2011 teams, where their defense was just absolutely stifling. The Cardinals have the type of defense that will hold early and then pile on with a lead. This defense has never been great in a deficit. Has never been great in tight games. They are physical enough and athletic enough to make great plays when they have a lead with the swagger that they can have because they've turned teams one-dimensional, but get overpowered in the second half of games if they stay on the field too long when it's a tight game. That's just what they have always been under Arians pretty much. I mean, they had a great defense late in 2013. They were incredible in 2014, and still even then they fell apart at the end of the year. But they've always been a team that plays defensively out of their minds when they have a lead.
Right, and they're not a team that is going to grind it out and kind of hold field position. And they, you know, they're closer to bend it but don't break and kind of relying on big plays. And they, I mean, truth be told, they haven't gotten big plays from the defense at this point outside of against Indy. And so, you know, I mean, the Justin Bethel pick six was great. Don't get me wrong.
So, yeah, so basically you went seven quarters with no play. So you got the first play, Bethel, defensively. You got the interception in overtime, Matthew, with a whole bunch of
nothing in between. Yeah.
I mean, in between in terms of playmaking.
And so, you know, and then in this game, so then, like you said, so you had basically six quarters in between where they didn't do anything, and then you had the Chandler Jones sack strip at the end of the fourth quarter. I mean, we're talking like 30 seconds left in the Indy game, and then in overtime you had the Tyrann Mathieu interception. So then you have those two, and then you go into game three and you have a sack from Chandler Jones, but you don't have any game-changing plays. You don't have any momentum-shifting plays that happen. And, well, and go ahead.
I was saying here's a stat in terms of the type of defense they need to play. They need to get their hands on balls. You know how many hands on balls that they've gotten so far this year? Combined, entering week four, nine. They've got their in three games. So in 12 quarters plus, they have gotten their hands on. They've had two interceptions and gotten their hands on nine other passes. That's it. They've had two interceptions. They've had the one forced fumble, and then their hands have got. So they've not been playmaking. They just haven't been making plays.
No, and that you're exactly right. They're not making plays. And for a team that desperately needs plays made, you know, that's the thing. You look at it, they've had in the first two games, they've had first three games, they've had three big plays. You know, they've had important plays, the Jerron Brown 3rd and 20, the Larry Fitzgerald catch last night. But in terms of explosive plays, they've had two. They've had the Justin Bethel pick six and the J.J. Nelson 45-yard touchdown. That's all of their explosive, like, plays. Everything else has been contained. Yes, they've had big yardage plays, but they haven't had, you know, consistent explosive plays. And when you look at Dallas last night, they took their big plays, those breakaways. You know, they had the Bryce Butler touchdown, then they had the Bryce Butler catch, and then they had the other Bryce Butler touchdown. They had the big Ezekiel Elliott run, you know, and then they were able to turn those big plays into points. Again, credit to Carson Palmer. He didn't force anything, and he was able to hold on to the ball when he was unrelentingly savaged by the Dallas Cowboys front three. Yes, front three, pass rush. But, you know, they need – this is a team that thrives on big plays, and both offensively and defensively. And I mean, they just haven't had it yet.
The other thing, you can't not talk about this, and this is the offensive line. Carson Palmer was just – I mean, and this is the part that makes it amazing is how good a game he had. Because what do we know about Carson Palmer? When he's under that much pressure, he turns into a bad quarterback. He was lights out. He was pressured, according to Pro Football Focus, I believe it was 23 times. 23 times he was pressured. He was sacked 6 times. His tackle play was bad. And I had to, I'm sure you get the emails from Pro Football Focus with some of the stats. And they talked about John Wentzel and Gerard Valdir. They each gave up a sack and 8 pressures. And I thought I had to clarify this No, literally, John Wentzel and Gerard Valdir each allowed a sack and 8 pressures each. So Carson was pressured 16 times off the edge, 16 that they credited to their tackles. Another, obviously, the other sacks came off of, you know, one was Jermaine Gresham. I think that one play where you had Jermaine Gresham one-on-one against DeMarcus Lawrence, I think that has to be Carson Palmer's fault, not getting the ball or a coverage sack, because I don't think anyone in their right mind has Jermaine Gresham as a tight end going up against DeMarcus Lawrence one-on-one on the edge for a 7-step drop. I think that play was, it's supposed to drop back. They push him out of the way and they get the ball away right away. He didn't. He got sacked. But they can't run the ball. They can't protect Carson Palmer. What is this offensive line that we thought was better than last year's?
Wait, so they're not good?
And to think, you remember the year that David Johnson had last year. Just think about this. That was a line that even the two of us believed was inferior to this line. And David Johnson put up the numbers he did. So that tells you just how incredibly good he was last year. His line did not do a great job. And right now, Gerard Valdir looks completely lost. I mean, Mike Iupati looked terrible when he was in there. Alex Boone now is hurt. John Wetzel is hurt. DJ Humphreys, who they're banking on. I mean, what, he's played 3 games, 4 games at left tackle and has managed to get hurt twice.
Right.
I don't know if there's a level you can go to as to just how poorly that line played.
And again, it goes back to the question I've asked, and you know, you're much more positive outlook than I am. And so I ask these questions. why can they not get an offensive line? You look at the best offensive line they've had in the Arians Keim era, and it's Gerard Valdir at left tackle and Mike Iupati at left guard, Lyle Sendlein at center.
Like old Lyle Sendlein.
Yeah, I can't even remember who the right guard was.
Ted Larson.
Was it Ted Larson?
Ted Larson. Yes, it was. 2015 was Ted Larson.
And Bobby Massey. So
yes,
it's not like they had to do any real digging or scouting for any of those players. Like, those are, like, Valdir was a known commodity. Iupati was a known commodity. Sendlein and Massey were Wisenhunt and Graves guys. And Ted Larson was a guy kind of off the scrap heap that they got to be their backup swing interior lineman. And like, it's just it's baffling to me that in year 5, like in year 2, definitely understand. You're still sorting things out, but in year 5, you're still, are you at a worse spot than you were at year 1? It's a legitimate question to ask at this point. Like, is your offensive line that you have invested two first-round picks, two high-price free agent acquisitions. I believe it's four, but it might be five. No, it is five.
Late round.
Yeah, yeah, day three picks, and you have literally nothing to show for it. I mean, you may have the worst offensive line in the NFL right now.
And this is now, I just kept, you have to wonder now, is the scheme, their offensive scheme, just inadequate for the offensive linemen of today?
Well, and so I asked somebody that, and I'm not going to say too much. It's an ex-NFL player that is very open on Twitter. You guys can probably figure this all out. And so I said, does Arians' offensive scheme put too much on the offensive line, or is their O-line just that bad? And his response was, I doubt it puts too much on the O-line, so I'd assume it's a talent issue. But he did say, I didn't watch much but this was last week, so I'm sure he's changed his mind quite a bit. But like, so this was after the Indy game when he says, I don't think it's a scheme issue, I think it's a talent issue. So then again, at that instance, then maybe it be like you said, maybe it becomes a scheme issue, because, well, you don't have the talent to do what you want to do, like you have to adjust. But again, we're in year five now. Like, that talent should be there. And I get that they're missing DJ Humphries and Mike Iupati. So are you telling me that getting back Humphries and Iupati, putting them at left tackle and left guard, and then moving Boone and Wetzel over to right guard and right tackle respectively is going to fix the offensive line? Because now all of a sudden you've reshuffled the entire deck, and now you have four new starters in again. Like, so it's not going to just like those guys get back and it's going to get better. It's still going to be a, you know, 2-3 game process when that happens. Now, you know, Alex Boone's out for who knows how long. Sounds like Humphries will play this week, so that's, you know, that's a positive. So it sounds like Wetzel's going to go to left guard at this point. While I don't know if Iupati's even going to be able to come back at this point.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. That's going to be the big question. Yeah. Moving on to another kind of a negative, and it has to do with the receiver, the issues they're having at receiver. And the production issues that they're having, it's not the Fitz problem. They continue to have a wide receiver problem in terms of production because of the absence of John Brown in the game, his unreliability. We were talking about a week ago, and J.J. Nelson hits the scene. Oh, he's broken out, offensive player of the week, 120 yards, 5 catches, a touchdown. He's now the most picked up fantasy player. And what does he do? Nothing. Literally zero. Targeted 3 times, no receptions, no yards, nothing. Now, he could have had one, could have had another. Parson missed him. Jerron Brown, he had a better game. Statistically, he's been okay. But you look at through the last 2 games, there have been 3 instances in which balls were in his hands and the DB just knocked them out. Then you have the other one, which was perhaps should have been an interception against Indy, but it ended up knocking. He lost concentration. It hit him in the numbers, and he just didn't catch the ball. When you have Jerron Brown as your number 2 receiver, your number 2 receiver needs to be more productive. It has to come up with more plays like that, because otherwise you end up with a Michael Floyd situation. If you get a healthy John Brown, you've got your 1 and your 2 with Smoke and with Fitz. You move Jerron to number 3 and Nelson to number 4, and then you can deal with those little inconsistencies. You can live with J.J. Nelson going for 5 and 121 game. That's huge. But then as your number 4 receiver, sometimes they don't have receptions. And so, you know, I also looked at Jermaine Gresham is one of the duds of the game. He had a good statistical game with the five receptions, but he also dropped two, including the touchdown on the last offensive play that he should have had for the touchdown. He also missed a couple of blocks, gave a sack. He was more involved, but it wasn't an overall good game, I felt, for him.
No, and that's the thing is you need – With all the injuries, you need somebody to step up. And I wrote it last week, and it happened, you know, in that indie game, and J.J. Nelson stepped up. But who steps up? Like, is there anybody that can answer the bell other than Larry Fitzgerald? And I think it's going to have to be a week-to-week thing. And so when you look at yesterday – you really only had Larry Fitzgerald. Like I said, statistically, Brown was fine, Jerron was fine, and Jermaine was fine. Andre Ellington, like you said, had a nice game. But again, it was very tame in that sense. Like there were no big plays. There was nothing grandiose about their game. It was all very, you know, okay, well, he had two catches for 25 yards and a touchdown, like five catches for 57 yards. They needed, you know, they didn't need another guy that had 13 catches for 150 yards, but they needed a guy that gave them, you know, four catches for 80 yards and a touchdown or something like that. Somebody that can take the pressure off. And they don't have it right now. And then you add into the fact that they're getting nothing from Nicholas or Gresham as a blocker. And it was what I was concerned about when they paid Jermaine Gresham so much, is that I don't discount his talent. I just don't know if you pay a guy that much money that then ask him to block. And let's be honest, that's not his strong suit. It never has been. And then you don't throw the ball
about it. Right. But then they raved about it. They raved about it week after week after week last year.
Right. And so when you look at it again, it's one of the things that you and I have talked about in the offseason previous, like self-scouting. Are they doing a good job of it? And so I don't know, maybe the answer is no right now, but it's just, they don't have the talent ready. You know, obviously TJ Logan's out, so it doesn't matter. But Chad Williams, I mean, he gets on the field, what, maybe 5 to 7 snaps a game? It's not like he's – and I'm talking from an offensive side of the ball. Like, it's not like they're even giving him a chance. And you and I mean, nobody's at practice. Nobody gets to see what's going on in practice every day. So we don't have a way – to discuss that, but you would like to see them figure out a way and elevate somebody like they did John Brown a couple of years ago, and in a consistent basis. But again, maybe it's week to week. So if you're listening for any fantasy information, here's your fantasy information. The only player worth playing every week is Larry Fitzgerald. So.
And even then, that's not right. Always true. After all, he had 7 catches in 2 games.
So, and yeah, maybe let me rephrase that. If you're in a PPR league, it's only worth playing Larry Fitzgerald. But yeah, I mean, like you don't know who's going to step up week to week. And like we said, Palmer had a great game. But could we really say any receiver outside of Fitz did? I mean, maybe Andre Ellington because he's technically a running back, but did anybody else really have a great game? Yeah, that's the question I have.
My final bit is I wrote about it today. I kind of harped on Twitter, and we were talking about it before the show. And the big negative for me was their inability to put that dagger in the first half. Basically, and you kind of felt it early on. When the Cardinals came away from that second drive pointless, and really it's in essence when they lost that touchdown, that second touchdown to Jerron Brown when Jared Beldier had the holding penalty, and it was a holding penalty, that basically lost the game for the Cardinals. The combination of losing the touchdown, having that come off the board, and then Phil Dawson missing the kick three kicks in a row, three games with a missed kick in a row, not good. That really set the Cardinals back, because if they go up 14-0, that game suddenly changes. Because even after that, they held Dallas to three and out. Then they traded punts, but it was then it led to that drive at the end of the first half where there was really good field position, and Dak Prescott, you know, gets the windmill, that the flip over defender's touchdown run that tied the game. Once that happened, lights out, Dallas was back in the game and they could play their game. If they got down 14-0, they weren't going to be able to base their offense off of Ezekiel Elliott in the running game. It was going to have to be a more traditional passing attack, which suited the Cardinals defensively. And their inability to – their mistakes. There were mistakes on that drive, obviously the penalty and the missed kick. And then they had dinky, stupid penalties on the drive where Dallas got their first touchdown. They kept it going. They were already on a short field, and they gave them yards. And that really – that just basically lost them the game, on top of the fact that the defense just did not, and they had to. After Arizona tied the score in the second half, they had to make a play, and they didn't. And then they ran out of gas.
Yeah, and that was, you know, that goes back to what we talked about. What is this team? Who are they? Well, you know, what is this iteration of the Cardinals now? And they are... You know, they are a team that relies on a methodical, ball-controlled, time-consuming offense. Their passing game is an extension of their running game. They are desperate for a big playmaker at this point. But then they're going to be a team that needs their defense to – shut down the other team and give them good field position, because they're not a team that you can trust to score. And, you know, you through three games, we're three games in and they haven't even scored 20 points in a game yet. But they sure have given up more than that. So that's
absolutely,
you know, that's not a recipe for a winning team. I know that's baffling. You don't score as many points as the other team, you're not going to win, but you know, when you don't have an offense that can score consistently, and you don't have a defense, or you have a defense that is clearly a bend but don't break, they're going to give up touchdowns. You know, the goal is going to be more, can they hold them to field goals and touchdowns? Then you're going to have a tough time getting wins. And so it's not that it's over. It's not that, oh, it can't be done, but they need something to go their way. They haven't gotten anything out of Robert Kimdiche yet. I thought it was interesting that they had the Bynes Dansby duo on so much yesterday. I felt like Reddick was playing well. But you know, the coaches.
Bynes only ended up, that was weird, because Bynes, I think, only played it like 9 snaps ultimately.
Right, and it was like in that fourth quarter on that drive, and that's what threw me off by that their one long drive, and so you know when you look at everything, they get Darren Buchanan back. Hassan Reddick's going to keep playing more. I think Buda Baker's going to start seeing more time at this point. They're going to have to let Kimdiche play at some point. They can't. I mean, I understand that he's a false or an offsides waiting to happen, but like they have to give him consistent snaps and not yo-yo him in and out of the game. Because I think that plays with him too. I think he comes in and he wants to make a play so bad that he can't, you know, that he's so juiced up that he's making mistakes. So,
and whew. Yeah. So coming up next to Rise Up, See Red, let's talk about the offensive line. We'll talk about a little bit more about what we think the Cardinals are. And then we'll, depending on, we might go to another segment, but we'll talk about the 49ers game, what to expect on the short week for the Cardinals and the long week for the 49ers. So coming up next on Rise Up, See Red, we'll talk about the offensive line issues. What do they need to do? We're back on Rise Up, See Red, the offensive line. We talked about the problems. Here's the problem. There's more injuries. DJ Humphreys might come back this week, but there's no certainty. Mike Iupati might come back. There's no certainty. Now, Alex Boone reportedly has a pec issue, left the game, was replaced by Daniel Munyer. And now it's been reported by Mike Jarecki that he's going to be out 3 to 4 weeks. So, yeah. And John Wetzel is day-to-day. So that offensive line already ravaged by injury takes another hit. Now, it should, if DJ comes back and if Iupati is healthy, then you're really okay. But then you still have the performance issues on the other side, where Evan Bame has not had a good start to the season and Jared Valdir has looked. And the thing, I can't question it. I can't question it. Every time he gives up a sack, every time there are people questioning his commitment to the team, and because of an over retirement, is he fully in? And I don't doubt that he's fully committed, and everyone says as such. I believe one of the reasons why he contemplated retirement is because he's, even though he's healthy, he's physically not right, or he can tell he's not what he was, and he's starting to see the decline, and he thought about getting out when he could, but ultimately the team needed him too badly. And it's not like the team talked him into coming back. He realized what a bind it would have put in the team. What do you do? Because people are saying bench him. Really? Who are you going to put a right tackle?
Right.
Wetzel? I mean, if DJ's Humphrey, you can move Wetzel over. But Wetzel's not his. Come on. Wetzel has not been good on the left side, and he's a better left side guy than a right side guy.
Right. And, you know, they had Ulrich John, and you and I talked about that John was their best right tackle in the preseason. He's now with the Green Bay Packers, who've had similar issues. Not as pronounced, but similar issues. And so, you know, when you look at it, I think you just have to hope these guys get healthy. And that's really all you can do at this point. I mean, there's really nothing else you can do. It's just hope these guys get healthy. I mean, maybe Will Holden goes in at right tackle. Maybe.
Heck, he might be starting the left tackle this week.
Right. If DJ doesn't get healthy. and then we'll say, man, we thought it was bad earlier. So yeah, I mean, it's all about health at this point. Like, I know that's kind of a cop out, but there's nothing else. I mean, anybody you bring in is going to be off the scrap pile. I guess like the best thing you could do would be to like start exploring trade opportunities, but who are you going to trade? Like, what are you going to trade? I mean, that's a move that like a team like Green Bay makes. That's a Super Bowl contending team. When you have other issues outside of just the offensive line, you can't trade a high priority pick for an offensive lineman. Unless it's like a ridiculous, like, you know, 5-year contract in hand as well type thing, but you know, Chandler Jones type thing where you can re-sign him to a long-term deal, but those guys aren't available. So you're going to be trading or trying to make a move for a second tier offensive lineman. And how much are you willing to give up for that?
And so ultimately, just like BA said, they just have to play better. They have to get healthy. They have to play better. Otherwise it's going to be bad. Going back to the questions, what type of team this is, you kind of gave your 2 cents. I want to tell mine. What I see, this isn't, you know, luckily the NFC West is bad. We're back to the NFC worst.
Bad news.
Seattle. I mean, but that's not bad news because it means the Cardinals have kind of been a dumpster fire in some ways. Their game out of first. And the game out of first is against the Rams, and
the Rams,
I don't know if you can trust.
Right, and they're going
across. You can't trust them because they looked like they were a dynamic defensive team, but then they gave up 39 points to the 49ers.
Right.
Who aren't good offensively.
Well, I guess we'll find out firsthand this weekend if they're not. But yeah, I mean,
because it's Brian Hoyer. Brian Hoyer.
And so when you look at it, you have I wanted to look at this. The Rams. Yeah, the Rams go to the Cowboys this weekend. So, I mean, as much as painful as it is, we're all Cowboys fans. The Seahawks are going to, I mean, if they lose Monday or Sunday night football in Seattle to the Colts, they really are done.
Turn the lights off.
Right. I mean, it's over for them.
They're going to be 500. The Cardinals. I mean, so are the Cardinals a good team? Yes and no. Are the Cardinals good? Yes and no. They are a good, flawed team, as we've seen. So, because they're not a bad team in the sense they're just bad. They are, I guess you could say, have a mediocre team with potential to be good because they just have some glaring problems. Their offense comes alive, and then their offensive line goes to poop, 6 sacks. Their defense looks dynamic, but then gives up 60 points in the second half. So they're almost good. They're almost good, which might be good enough to win this division, especially if they go from almost good to just good. They don't even have to be great, just good.
Right, and so that's the thing is they are still a playoff team, and our playoff contending team. I won't say they're a playoff team, but they're still a team that can make the playoffs. So they got to figure it out. And the one, you know, thing that is kind of saving grace is that, like you said, they play in a really bad division where they might have time to figure it out. You know, if they win this week, yes, it's going to extend the pain a little bit. Because then they have to go to Seattle the next week. But then they get Tampa Bay at home, and Tampa Bay look kind of lost against Minnesota and Case Keenum. And then they have the Rams in Los Angeles. In London. And that's going to be a tough game. I mean, let's just be honest. That's going to be a game where they might lose.
Yes.
But I mean, that's game 7 of the season. And then they're, you know, at their bye week, and then they come off their bye week and they get the 49ers in San Francisco at game 8. And then game 9 is a short week, Thursday night game. At home against Seattle. So, you know, can they be 4-5? And people might be saying 4-5, like that's not a good team. But they don't necessarily have to be a good team. They just have to be the best team in a bad division. And
then who knows what happens in the playoffs?
Right. And you just want to get to the dance at this point and figure it out. And so that's where you're at right now is you're counting games. You're paying attention to the division and making sure nobody really like figures it out. And, you know, again, through 3 weeks, call me a hater. I'm just not going to believe in the Rams yet because they're still the Rams until they prove otherwise. So when it all is boiled down and comes down to it, what ends up happening? Who are the Cardinals and can they find their way? And so that's kind of what we'll be watching to see if it happens.
So this week against the San Francisco 49ers, as woeful as the 49ers have been, here's the thing. They're not that far off statistically than the Cardinals. The 49ers at least have put up points in the game. They scored 39 points on Thursday Night Football, but they average only 17 points a game. The Cardinals are only averaging 18.7, and that includes a return touchdown, a defensive touchdown.
Woo.
Yeah. Then you look at the points allowed. Guess what? San Francisco and Arizona are identically allowing 25.3 points a game. That's good for 27th. The Cardinals have given up more touchdowns than the 49ers. They've allowed 10 touchdowns. The 49ers have given up 8. You know, the the Cardinals have given up more sacks. They've Carson Palmer's been sacked 11 times. The 49ers are giving up 10 sacks. So you're what you're running across is – and turnover ratio, the Cardinals are -3 and San Francisco is -1. So while I don't think anyone in their right mind believes that the 49ers are a better team, statistically they are not far off. I mean, statistically they're better than the Cardinals in a lot of ways.
Right, and so that, again, that comes down to, like, what do the Cardinals have? Can they find a way to be a team that puts up consistent numbers? And honestly, we don't know, and that might not be what you tune in the show to hear, but we're being honest. Like, do you want us to say, like, oh, yeah, they're a good team, don't worry about it? Like, because statistically they're not. They're – I think it was 18th in points for and 29th in points against. Like, that's not a good football team. So we're waiting to see if something clicks, if health helps, if the offense can find its footing, if the defense can figure out, because we can't blame the offense this week for the defense. We just can't. Like, yes, we can blame them for the short fields, but they had plenty of rest this week. I mean, it wasn't like they were continuously on the field, three and out, three and out, three and out. Like, the Cardinals
– I know. The defense had 47 snaps to the offense's 81. That is rest. And the Cardinals had control of the ball for 36 minutes of the game.
So, I mean, again, like, it was on the defense this week. Obviously the offense didn't do enough, but that's what I talked about at the beginning of the show. Like, Carson Palmer did enough for the Cardinals to win. He wasn't going to go out there and do what Tom Brady did against the Houston Texans, where they didn't deserve to win a game, but he's the best player on the field and he figured out a way. But he did enough. He did enough for the Cardinals to win, and his defense, his running game, and clearly his offensive line couldn't back him up. So now it goes into San Francisco, and you say, okay, well, San Francisco defense was awful, but the Rams have put up now 40 points in two games. And San Francisco's offense actually kind of looked okay, but the Rams defense has looked bad in two games too. So we don't really know who San Francisco is as a team either. So what we do know is, this is as must win of a week four game as it could possibly be, because the Cardinals cannot start losing games in the division. Because if they lose this game, no matter what happens in Seattle, they are the bottom of the division just based on record, just based on head-to-head division record. Because
And the 1-3 start last year killed them.
Right.
You know, they couldn't get themselves out of that hole at 1-3. They need to be 2-2 to reset things.
Right. And they really, I mean, it's what we talked about. Like, if we're going to have a glimmer of hope of David Johnson coming back, let's just call it Veterans Day time, you know, right around that time of the year. They need to be, you know, a 4-5 team or a 5-4 team when he comes back in week 10. They can't afford to be a 3-6 team or a 2-7 team and expect him to rescue them to 6 or 7 straight wins. Like, it's not
that's crazy talk.
Right. It's not plausible for him, one, but two, it's likely not plausible for any team in that straight. So it starts this week. The offense was fine except for, you know, that whole scoring points thing. And the defense, again, was fine, except for that whole not allowing them to score points thing. So if they can figure out the whole, like, how to score some points while not giving up a bunch of points, I think they'll be okay. But they haven't shown that they can do that against good teams. Now, San Francisco doesn't look like a good team, so maybe, like Jess said, maybe this is a week where they're able to figure it out and they're able to get a win. And I think you and I would both agree, like, we're both going to bet, so to speak, on the Cardinals this week. I mean, I don't think that they blow out San Francisco. I don't think we get to see the offensive performance that we're waiting for, but I do think that they're going to put up, you know, over 20 points, and I think they pull out a 24, you know, 18 type of win.
And I, that's the hope I'm hoping as well. I don't think it'll be a get well, but I think it'll get well enough.
Right. It's not going to be a 42-10 shellacking.
It's not a get well game. It's a get well enough game just to hit the reset button to be back at 500. But to what you were saying on the card, if we're in week four and we can't bet on the Cardinals against the 49ers, then the season is lost already. So we sort of have to talk this way right now. And
maybe the eulogy gets written this weekend. I don't think it will, but maybe it does. I mean, I can tell you if they lose to the 49ers, we'll definitely have a candlelight vigil and be ready with a eulogy on next week. But I don't think we're at that point yet. Maybe we're being stubborn, but I don't think we're there quite yet.
And at least Vegas wise, here it's comforting. The Cardinals are favored by 7 right now. It's a consensus 7-point spread. With 75% of the money going towards the Cardinals already, with a predicted score of 26-15, the Cardinals will win and cover the spread. So, yeah, so there's at least that, guys. And that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You could find us all over the web. You could find us on CardsWire.com. You could find us on Revenge of the Birds. Subscribe to us on iTunes, please. So subscribe to the show on iTunes. That way you get it delivered right to you each and every week. And you know, I wouldn't complain. Neither one of us would complain about a 5-star rating. Go ahead and do that. We'd love it. We're on Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, also on Audio Boom and Blog Talk Radio. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This has been the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, episode 168. We'll talk to you guys next week. Go Cardinals and rise up Sea Red.